Welcome back to The Film Experience. This is your host, Nathaniel, and I'm here with my regular co-host, Murtada.
Hello, guys. How is everybody doing this morning?
Or whichever time of day you're listening to this.
Yes, we do always record in the morning, but we know that you could be listening to it any time.
We're on loop. If you just can't get enough.
Hopefully.
So next week is a big, big movie-going weekend, because this weekend coming up is Thanksgiving. So this weekend was a little bit of a preamble. Everything wants to scramble and open so that, you know, they can make millions and millions during the holidays. Mm-hmm. So Fantastic Beasts 2, which I avoided, and now I have to pray does not get a costume design nomination like the previous one.
It won last time, yeah. I have only seen the first ever Harry Potter movie, and that's it. I have never seen any of the sequels or these new iterations.
Wow, you live a blessed life.
I knew it wasn't for me.
I have seen all of them and enjoyed two of them.
Yeah, I haven't really enjoyed the one I saw, so I'm like, okay, bye.
I kind of enjoy Azkaban and Order of the Phoenix, but that's kind of it for me. But anyway, another topic since neither of us saw it. But Widows. Let's start with Widows, the other big new movie this weekend, which we should tell you up front we're both fans of.
Yes, big fans of Widows. Steve McQueen can do no wrong in my book because I've liked all the movies that he has made so far.
Yeah, so why don't you give us a little setup for those who've been living under a rock and have never heard of Widows?
So Widows is based on a British miniseries from the 80s written by Linda LaPlante. And it is about four women, maybe five, whose husbands are career criminals, and one of their heists gone wrong, and they all die, and the women are widowed. The women are Viola Davis, Elizabeth Debicki, Cynthia Erivo, and Michelle Rodriguez. And then they decide, because they owe the money that their husband stole, that the only way that they can pay it is to do a heist of their own. So they become a team of robbers. But the movie's deeper than that. It takes place in Chicago. They moved the action from London to Chicago. And it's very rooted in the city's sort of story. There, Robert Duvall and Colin Farrell play father and son corrupt politician duo. And their rivals for a seat as an alderman in Chicago are Brian Tyree Henry and Daniel Kaluuya as a brother and his enforcer. So Kaluuya is the enforcer, and Brian Tyree Henry is the politician running against Colin Farrell. And so all of these characters, plus the women, are in this sort of story of intrigue and corruption and police brutality. And, you know, it touches on all the big themes, right? Race, I think I already said political corruption, but it's so dense, and it builds to the heist, but it also, I think the more interesting bits of it are not exactly the heist, but the interrelationships between all these different characters and how it fits into the story of Chicago itself.
Yeah, the heist is the basic jumping off point of plot-wise, but to call it a heist movie as is shorthand and everyone is doing is really a disservice if you're familiar with the heist genre, because this is, I would call it much more of a drama with a heist subplot.
Yes, and I don't think McQueen himself is interested in the heist itself that much, because when the heist happens, like he, you know, they
well,
go
the heist
through the
is very good. Don't misread that though. The heist is very exciting, so he's shot it in like it's edited exciting. It's very excited.
Yeah, it is exciting, but also, like, I would say, like, if like, I would just imagine that wasn't what attracted him to the material.
Are you telling me that the director of Hunger and Shame and 12 Years a Slave was not that interested in making an action movie?
Maybe not. And yeah, it's no, got
he's
like
four, he's 4 for 4, so I agree with you. Like, he hasn't made a bad movie yet. Not even a not so good movie. They're all very good.
Yeah, this is just another one. And it's, you know, we talked about all these characters, and you can tell this is a huge sprawling cast. Like, we haven't even mentioned Liam Neeson or Carrie Coon or Jackie Weaver or Lucas Haas. So many actors and so many characters, and they're all very well drawn characters, and you know, there is scenes, none of these actors are in all the scenes together, but like, I think all the scene pops, except for maybe a couple, all the scenes pop because the interrelationships are written so well, and all the actors rise to the occasion and are I mean, if SAG doesn't nominate this for Best Ensemble, they would have lost their minds.
I think it's a pretty safe call, despite how much competition there is, and despite super bizarre detours, curveballs, like the Independent Spirit nominations deciding that Suspiria equals Best Ensemble, which is completely bonkers, but we can talk about that later.
Yes.
So the point is, you never know what people are looking for in ensembles, but if they're not looking at something like Widows, they're just not paying attention.
Yeah.
Although, what? I will say about this that since it is such a sprawling ensemble, I think we should do a ranking of the actors. Because I will say, I thought it was very, very well acted, almost across the board, but I do have a nitpick.
Okay. And well, let's start with who we liked. Let's go with who we liked, right?
Uh-huh.
So, do you want to go first? Who was your MVP?
My MVP is Elizabeth Debicki, who yes. I've loved in everything. I keep waiting for her to become a breakout star, and she has so much to play with in this part. And one of the clearest arcs. Like, everybody has a lot of meat to chew on in their characterizations, but hers is a little more... She's got the benefit of a little more of a dynamic arc. Like, it's much more clearly plotted.
Yeah, I think she has the best part.
Yeah.
I agree. She has the best part, and I also loved her. And I think, you know, she's part, obviously, of the, you know, the central four, but her scene partners are Lucas Haas and Jackie Weaver in her subplot, and she elevates those just because she's so great. I think she elevates those scenes so much. I don't think I've ever seen Lucas Haas be this good in a movie before, and maybe he was just inspired by Debicki.
Witness.
that was like 50 years ago.
But he's amazing in Witness. It's a great child performance. But anyway, he is very good in this. Oh, and yeah. And we should also mention, even the scenes where she doesn't have a star actor to work with, two of my favorite of her scenes are with people who, you know, they're like one-line characters type of thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, those scenes are really fun, too.
Yeah, it's in the trailer, so we can mention it. It's the scene with the gun that you see in the trailer. I think it's the best scene in the movie.
So funny.
Yes. She's so funny in that. I liked her too. And just Jackie Weaver to me was so funny as her mom, because if you can imagine Jackie Weaver, who's 5'2", and Elizabeth Debicki is 6'2", so she is a foot taller. And they gave her the biggest hair in the world. I think her hair was maybe 4 inches long. And so they do look kind of the same size.
Big scene together, Elizabeth Debicki is seated.
Yes. In both scenes they have together, she is seated. Yeah, she's never standing up.
And so in one case, Jackie Weaver is literally, like, towering over her.
Yes. I agree, Elizabeth Debicki is the MVP. I think my second person right behind her would be Viola Davis, of course. She is the unquestionable leader of the Widows. What I loved about her character is that the character is sort of like holds her cards very close to her her chest and doesn't show a lot. But then as the movie goes along, it's revealed, more of her story is revealed, like, you know, they're like, they're peeling off an onion, and it gives her more dimension to play and more things to do, as the movie goes along, and, you know, she holds the sort of, the finale, where she takes center stage, and those were her strongest scenes, I thought.
I mean, she's great in the movie, too. Yeah, I mean, she's such a movie star. I'm so happy that her career happened. I remember being, like, thrilled with her back with Far From Heaven and Solaris, and wondering, is she going to get an Antoine Fisher, and, like, is this actress going to get the part she deserves? And lo and behold, here we are.
Yeah.
15 years later, and she's a huge star, and I couldn't be more pleased.
Yeah, and I remember thinking when she took that TV show, that I'm like, what is she doing? But actually, that TV show, I've never watched it. But obviously, it's a show that was successful. It's the show that put her in the zeitgeist. It's a show that gave her exposure as a leading lady. And so, she managed her career really well. And obviously, her talent is why she is a star now. But also, I think she did well with just the choices that she makes.
Yeah. One thing I loved about her in this movie is that, you know, her screen persona tends to be these, if people are reductive about her, as people are prone to be with stars, well, you know, and they're, you know, they get reduced to their essence, you know, so people think of her as a fierce woman, and these sort of volcanic emotions that you hear a lot about her. But one thing I loved about this is she was playing things that I haven't really seen her play, like fear. So there's less confidence than I've seen in other performances, which I thought was really intriguing. Like, she is a fierce presence, but she's aware that she's out of her depth, which I loved that combination.
Yeah, she definitely has a lot of notes to play as the story goes along, yeah.
So she would also be, we have the same order so far.
Yeah, and I think my next person is somebody whose scene with Viola was a highlight for me, apart from the Debicki scene with the gun, is Brian Tyree Henry. That scene where he comes in and takes Viola's dog out from her arms, I was like, just, he's such a presence in this movie. And that scene sort of, like, it's like a perfect tennis match between actors, right? And that's the scene where she plays fear, and he's so good in it. And he matches her so well, even though the dog tries to steal the scene. But
no offense to Brian Tyree Henry, who is even better in If Beale Street Could Talk. He's such a good actor. My three is Olivia the dog, because I'm just totally, totally in love with that dog.
That dog is so cute, and he has the cutest eyes, and they keep showing his eyes.
I love when movies give, like, that much attention to an animal. I just love, because movies never center people's pets, and people's pets are they are very emotionally attached to them, so it always seems to me like a big vacuum in movies. So in this movie, I love the way every scene you see with Viola and the dog, she's, like, gripping onto that dog after that scene, because the dog is threatened in the scene, and you could tell that she's, like, you know, she's like, I'm never letting this dog out of my sight, which I thought was such a beautiful note.
Yes, yes. Olivia is definitely up there, and she gets the big sort of twist scene is all about Olivia the dog.
Yeah. You're next. Who's after Brian Tyree Henry for you?
I think I really enjoyed looking at, I already talked about Jackie Weaver. I loved her two scenes, but I also enjoyed looking at Cynthia Erivo running. She sort of has the tiniest role in the four main actresses, but, you know, she's very physical. She gets the most physical part, and And she's such, that scene where she runs to catch the bus was beautiful, I thought.
I loved the crowd commentary, the sort of, the chorus of off-screen voices when she was running for the bus, which just delighted me.
Yes.
The movie has a lot of scenes that don't necessarily need to be there, but that's one of the reasons it's so rich.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what makes it so interesting.
Although, did you ever feel that it was maybe, that said, did you ever feel it was maybe a little overstuffed at times? Like, it could have been longer?
It could have been longer, and I know some critics have sort of talked about the pace, but I, frankly, enjoyed all the scenes that were in, even though sometimes you're like, why are they there? There is one scene, and we'll get to it. There was the one scene, I think we already talked about it, you know, offline, that should have been cut. That's the one scene where I was like, what are we doing? What is this about? But every other thing, even though, you know, like we're talking about Cynthia Erivo, she has a subplot where Adipero Ojoyo appears as somebody she works with that sort of has nothing to do with the rest of the story of the movie, but it sort of enriches the story of people in Chicago, because then there is a connection with that character to sort of Colin Farrell's character that we don't see at first. And it's just sort of the richness of building this tapestry of character and story. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing we should mention when you were listing the themes earlier is one of the main themes is actually not just corruption in politics, but socioeconomic, the disparities of people's economic
income.
Standing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And and I thought that was beautifully rendered in the movie, particularly in one bravura shot where you're like, where is the shot going? Why am I looking at a car? And the camera never cuts away on this entire drive that the car takes, and you only are looking at the car from outside. And then it turns into an amazing scene, because in one scene that's like 2 minutes long or whatever, you get the economic disparity and the socioeconomic commentary on Chicago all in one scene in 2 minutes from a shot that has no actors in it. It's so amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he is a master filmmaker. That scene is a highlight. But I also love sort of all his visual flares, like when he's always shooting in mirrors. There's a lot of mirror and reflection, and like, we won't give it away, but there is a two shot of Viola and Becky where they see each other in a place where they weren't expecting. Like, you know, it's a movie it's an action movie, but it's definitely also an art film.
Yeah. And I really hope it's a huge hit. I haven't looked at the box office for the weekend yet, but I'm hoping. Okay, back to our countdown. Let's speed up. I would say next for me would be Daniel Kaluuya, who, at first, I was resisting everybody raving about him, because I was like, the part's so small. But I've seen the movie twice, and when I'm not watching the movie and remembering the movie, I'm always seeing him. So he, even though it's a very limited role, not just in screen time, but in sort of conception of the character, he's very impactful.
Yeah, he's definitely, like you said, very memorable. The only reason he will be my next, and the only reason I didn't put him at the top is his big highlight scene was so violent, and I watched it, even though I saw the movie twice, I watched it both times from between my fingers, because I couldn't watch. I'm sorry, I'm a wuss, but he is great.
Yeah. Who's next for you?
I'm trying to remember who else is in this movie. I think I really enjoyed, I think we talked about Lucas Haas, so he would have been my next, but I can pick somebody we haven't talked about. I really liked Colin Farrell in the part as Jack Mulligan, so he will be my next.
Yeah.
Although he's not, like, it's not surprising, like, I feel like it's similar to the part he did in Roman Israel. He was like a lawyer in that, and he's a politician in this. It's sort of playing these sort of rich, corrupt people, and he gives it the same energy.
Yeah, but what's interesting about both the characters of these, like, a corrupt person who doesn't necessarily, like, value his own corruption, in both cases he's conflicted about it.
Yes, yes, that's true.
And wants to not be corrupt, which makes him hard to... It makes it hard to say that he's the villain of the piece, because he's not really, and, like, sort of everybody's shady in the movie, including the women, since they're doing crimes. But, yeah, he's really good in it, but my next would be Cynthia Erivo.
What did you like about her, besides the running?
I just loved the energy that she brought to the character, and it was... You know, sometimes when you've seen someone on stage, and I realize this is a luxury that I have seen her on stage, that I live in New York, but sometimes when you see someone on stage, the first time you're seeing them on screen, it can be disappointing because stage energy is so different, and the way your presence is felt in the theater is so different than it is on screen, and so I was a little worried, I'll just put it out there, because I was hoping that when... ever they make the Color Purple musical that they'd cast her, but I knew she would need like some filmography behind her were that to ever happen. And I was just kind of felt relief that she was so watchable as a screen actor, because those talents don't always transfer from medium to medium.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely has a presence, and in the first scene where she with her and where she meets Viola for the first time, like she could hold her own against Viola Davis, and that's not an easy task to do.
Right. Yeah, Viola can blow other people off the screen, but their confrontation, which basically they're two big scenes together, they're not really talking to each other, which is what I loved about both of the scenes. They're sort of talking through other people or not talking at all, and both of the scenes have such crackling energy. And which would not be there if Cynthia Erivo couldn't hold her own on screen.
Yeah, although the confrontation highlight has to be the Viola DeBecky confrontation. That was the highlight of all the scenes between
the
widows.
Well, that's why they're the two MVPs of the movie.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a bunch of other people in the movie. We basically talked about the many things, but I have to say, a performance I thought was not good, even though I love the movie, Robert Duvall.
I kind of liked him more than Liam Neeson, actually.
Oh, really?
You know, there maybe because the Robert Duvall big scene where he confronts his son has, like, sort of, has revelations about the characters and about the story, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed that. So maybe that's why I put him on top of Liam Neeson. Imagine that visual.
I was like, no, thank you. I just thought he was given too much free rein. It actually surprised me a little because McQueen's obviously so very good with the actors because in all of the movies, the performances are so rich. In all four of his movies. So I was surprised a little, like, why are you giving him so much free rein to just, I mean, it was almost camp. Maybe he wanted that element, but it almost verged into camp in those scenes, I felt.
Yeah.
Cause it was just so much.
Mm-hmm. I think the only person we haven't talked about is Michelle Rodriguez.
Yes. Who would be my other least favorite. But again, this is nitpicking because the movie is great. You should all see it.
Yeah, the movie is great and she's fine.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah. But for such a opportunity to work, you know, I wanted a little more from her. Given that it's such a plum opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the only scene that I was like, what the fuck, why are we here? What are we doing? Is one of her scenes.
Yeah.
And I don't know, is it the writing in the scene or the way that it was presented to us? Because there's an implication that it is sort of like a subplot that's going somewhere and then it doesn't. And then it's just, it's sort of felt like we didn't need it. So I don't know the blame is her or just the script.
Yeah, that is a little confusing. And basically the whole purpose of the scene, plot-wise, is sort of then passed off to Elizabeth Debicki, who's already carrying so much of the movie with Viola that I was like, well, then why do we need all that? Those two.
Yeah, why did we go there?
So in that way, the movie, I mean, it isn't perfect. Like, there are very few perfect movies. The seams of putting this much story into a two-hour movie show a little bit, and I would say that's a way it shows.
Yes, yeah. That would be my only note, really.
But it's a very strong movie. Do you think it's going to get a Best Picture nomination? Because I keep changing my mind about that.
I mean, unlike you, I've checked the box office, and the box office is not great.
Oh.
So that's like a note. But it's a note, but also a lot of movies have been underperforming this year. Mm-hmm. All these movies that are being released in October and November have not done so well. So maybe in the end, box office is not going to be a factor if they're all underperforming.
Yeah, other than Black Panther and A Star Is Born.
Yeah, other than those two, like, all these movies that people are talking about for awards are sort of underperforming. Like, we didn't even get, like, a breakout, you know, those numbers that Blue Jasmine or the Grand Budapest Hotel in limited release, nobody has done the 90,000, you know, per screen average for the weekend this year.
Yeah. Hopefully The Favorite will, still to come. Oh, and for, you know, Thanksgiving weekend. We'll see.
But is there anything else you wanted to say about Widows?
I hope they don't make a sequel. The ending is so perfect. I just want to say this.
Yeah.
But it's the type of ending where I could see, if it were a huge hit, people are like, let's get everybody get back together again. You know, like some crass, like,
yeah,
studio, you know.
Yes, I could see that, but it's perfect as it is.
So that's all I have to say about Widows for now. Very eager to hear what you think of it.
So let us know in the comments.
Yeah, I initially loved it so much the first time, and then I went like a month without seeing it, and I saw all these other movies, and I was like, was Widows really actually as good as I thought? And so it started like to fall down my list. And then I saw it a second time, and it was, you know, and then it moved back up. So it's like, whatever, it's really good, go see it.
It's great, yeah. All right, do you want to move on to our next movie this week, Green Book?
Our next movie is Green Book, which is a true story about an Italian guy who chauffeurs a classical African American. Well, is he even American? I forget where he's from. Or is he? No, he's from some other country, isn't he?
I think he's American. But he studied in Russia and
elsewhere. Oh, that's what's throwing me. Yeah, he studied overseas. So he's very sophisticated. An African American classical pianist. So he chauffeurs him around the Deep South in the 60s. And so the whole plot setup, for those of you who have not seen the trailer, is that Don Shirley, the musician, hires the Italian guy, who I forget his name, played by Viggo Mortensen.
Tony Lip.
Tony Lip. So Don Shirley, these names. So Don Shirley and Tony Lip take, it's kind of like a road trip bromance. I don't know how to describe it. It sounds so stupid, but it's an enjoyable movie.
It's a road trip movie. The name, the title, it comes.
Oh right, I'm forgetting a crucial part of my introduction.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the exact information about what it is, but the Green Book is an actual. It's called, the title of it is The Negro Motorist Green Book. It's a travel book that was published in the 50s and 60s. It was actually published from 1937 to 1966.
So regularly updated as travel guides are.
Regularly updated as a travel guide, and it basically told African Americans where, you know, options for lodging and dining as they traveled in segregated towns and segregated areas. In the not just in, I mean, the movie implies it's just the South, but I've been reading about the book, and sort of the book is actually all encompassing, and there were segregated areas even in New York.
Like officially segregated or just culturally segregated?
Like culturally segregated, where, you know, black people were not welcome. And the book sort of touched on all of those. And the guide touched on all of that.
Yeah, I mean, from what little we get of the guide in the movie, it both warns them of places that are not necessarily welcoming and places that are, like, illegal because of the segregation.
Yeah. I think the movie's biggest failure, I did not like this movie at all. I think the movie's biggest failure is that even though it's titled Green Book, mm-hmm. the Green Book is maybe mentioned two times, and you don't get a sense at all of it or how they used it. And for a movie to be called Green Book and then to ignore the Green Book, it was crazy. Like, well, I would have rather...
Doesn't it imply that they were using it all the time? Because there's a lot of scenes where you see the injustice of it, because the power dynamic between the characters is that the musician is much wealthier than mm-hmm. the driver, and yet yeah. the driver gets to stay in nicer hotels.
Yeah, I guess, but what would have been a more interesting story to me is if you're going to title your movie Green Book, mm-hmm. then maybe the story should have been about how that information was collected, as opposed to centering a racist white man in the story of going, of using the Green Book. You know, that's just one way I think they could have done it. Mm. But, you know, the story is written basically by, is it the son or the grandson of Tony Lip? And he wrote it about his father's friendship with Doc Shirley. So it's sort of a personal story. He's one of the screenwriters.
Oh, okay. Like a kind of like a first man situation.
Yes.
Where the sons of Neil Armstrong were involved.
Yeah. And if people are interested in learning more about the Green Book, there's a couple of articles. There's an article at Vox by Alyssa Wilkinson, who sort of went and found a lot of information about the Green Book itself. And that was really interesting to read. And also in Shadow and Act, there is a review of Green Book that also goes into the history of the Green Book, Motorist Guide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the movie is very broad, so you only get, like, the general sense movies give you of 60s in the South. So yeah, you're not getting those details. So if you want the details, you'll have to read up.
Yeah, I mean, the movie is all about this friendship, right? Or this
yes.
relationship. Or that becomes a friendship. So that's the story of it, yeah.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, it does have a happy ending.
They solve racism.
at least between the two of them, they solved it. Yeah, no, because they stayed friends their whole lives, which is, like, the point that the movie is making of, you know, in classic road trip fashion, you know, characters come together emotionally. I mean, the road trip movie has its own very, very particular beats that this movie is basically playing all of. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Even though you didn't like it, that it's like a classically set up road movie in terms of how it plays out.
Yes, it is definitely a road movie, you know, mismatched people at the beginning, by the end they're not so mismatched. It's because of all the things that happened to them on their literal journey, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you like road trip movies, you might like this more than Murtada.
I would not advise anyone to see this movie. I would say go see Widows, go see something else.
So I'm very curious about your reaction because I saw it at Middleburg and the whole audience seemed to be so into it.
It just, to me, everything seemed false, right? Like even though it's based on a true story, they are, you know, sort of painting with such a broad brush that none of the characters or the situations they're in felt true to me. It just felt as all contrived to sort of get them to get the reaction from the audience of enjoyable, the sort of like, oh, this is so good. And it's basically a movie to make people feel good about something that I don't think in 2018 we should be feeling good about. Because it, you know, as a black man living in America, this is not the reality.
Right, but don't you think one of, I'm not saying that it's a great movie or anything, but don't you think one of the purposes of a certain subset of movies is escapism and to make people feel better about their miserable lives?
Yeah, definitely. This is what this movie is trying to do. Yeah. But also, I just couldn't connect to that at all. Because like I said, it's just everything felt contrived and very false. Like the characterizations felt false, the situation, you know, we don't want to give sort of a lot of spoilers, but the situations sort of that create the conflict and resolution, everything felt false and like they won't behave like that. Like I don't think. And like even the acting was, I mean, I guess this because the script is so broad, the acting felt so false to me too. Like Viggo in every scene, he's like waving his hands. As if that's
but
the only way.
But he's Italian, Murtada.
Exactly. Is that the only way Italian Americans react by waving their hands all the time? And, you know, Mahershala is playing this sort of like refined black man. And so then every time he's sitting ramrod straight, you know, nobody sits like that for 24 hours a day. Like, it's just everything felt to me just very false.
Yeah. There was one scene where, I mean, I thought the movie was really funny, which is, I think, why it's going over well. Because it is, I totally get your criticisms, but I think that's why it's going over well, is it's fun to watch. If you're not thinking of it in terms of, like, should we be celebrating racism being solved in 2018? But the one scene that really threw me out of the picture, because I thought it was so bad, was they get, I forget what happens in the movie, but they get stopped in the sort of rain. I think maybe something goes wrong with the car or something. And so they're out in the rain having this like argument. And that scene was so poorly acted that I was kind of like, and they're both going to be Oscar nominated for this? What?
One thing I would say, like, I know people have been talking about Mahershala Ali as like the front runner in supporting actor. And I sort of like, there is, he has a clip. He has the clip, so I could see why he
but
is
the clip is his worst scene.
You know, I don't think either of those performances are good, so I won't argue whether he's good or not. But it's the clip. It's the clip where his character has an emotional outburst. It's something that can be played over and over. And even though I don't think he's particularly great at it, like the things that his character are saying are enough. Yeah, I don't think this movie has, it should be in any award conversation for any element, acting, writing, directing, whatever. It should not be. Maybe up for Razzies. That's the only thing I would give it.
It's not going to get, sorry, it's not going to get Razzie nominations. Oh, but did you at least like Linda Cardellini? I'm sorry.
So yes, actually that was my favorite, the subplot of the letters. Was my favorite thing. And just her face when she was reading letters was just like, you know, this bright sunshine in the middle of all this other dredge. It was just beautiful. She did that. She was great.
I always loved seeing her in movies and television. She's such a secret weapon. And never celebrated.
Yeah, she's great in this film. Although it's like a tiny part. Basically, it's all reaction shots. Like, she doesn't really have anything to do.
Right, but in some years, that would be enough for a nomination. If the movie is like a huge, huge Oscar hit.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, let's see how the box office goes Thanksgiving weekend, and then I think we'll have a better. But like, you know, we talked about this movie earlier, and I think the backlash that I was predicting for it is coming. I encourage everyone to read that Shadow and Act review. And I think as more and more people see it, more African American people see it, the backlash will increase.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I got the wrong impression of it at Middleburg, but Middleburg, the festival, even though festivals tend to be not super diverse, Middleburg is more diverse as a film festival because it's run by an African American woman and she's very big culturally and invests in a lot of things and promotes a lot of art. So the crowd at that movie that I saw it at the premiere there was very diverse. Mm-hmm. And people were just, they seemed thrilled with the movie. Like, there was standing ovations, but it is a festival. Standing ovations are very common.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I mean, I could see, like, I just saw it at Regal Union Square, and, like, everybody, I think, in that theater, except me and Philip, loved it.
Mm.
You know, just listening to people leaving, you know, yeah. They were all sort of enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, it's, as I said, it's easy to enjoy.
It is. I mean, it's easy. Yes, I agree with you. It's easy to enjoy. But if you even think about anything for just a split second, there is no way you leave this movie enjoying it.
Murtada's voice is going to be in your head if you're laughing too much at this movie. It's like, why are you enjoying this?
Okay, I laughed a couple of times. So, you know, I don't want to. You know, tell people not to enjoy it. But it's just...
It is a funny movie. Whether or not it's any good is, like, up to you. But it has very funny moments.
Yeah. But like I said, you know, we'll see what happens with this movie. It's very interesting to me what's going to happen with it.
I have something I want to discuss about it, but I think it's a little too early to discuss because it's very spoilery. So perhaps we'll have a follow-up when we see how Oscars are going.
Yeah, you know, we'll see when it starts getting more nominations, we can discuss it more. Because, like, it's only in 25 theaters, we don't want to give everything out. But we can discuss Mahershala Ali and Best Supporting Actor.
Yes, we can. What a segue, Murtada. You're on fire this morning.
One of the things that has been surprising to me in Supporting Actor is sort of, like, if we want to also talk about the Spirit Awards, which can just... the nominations that just came out, is sort of Richard E. Grant is solidifying his status in the category.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he's now a sure thing.
Right. So I would say the three people who are in the lead right now are Mahershala, Richard E. Grant, and Sam Elliott for nominations.
Yes.
From there, I believe opinions wildly diverge.
Yes.
Like, a lot of people still think Timothée Chalamet is happening, but I personally don't. I think that might be an internet thing.
Yeah, that movie's not performing, but, you know,
and
a lot...
You know how the internet's very into, like, younger actors, and Oscar typically is more reserved about them?
Yes. Somebody whose campaign has really revved up was, like, a big, huge New York Times profile this weekend... And lots of appearances as Michael B. Jordan in Black Panther.
So Thank God, because that would be a deserving nomination.
Yeah, so I think that could be the next person after the top three you mentioned.
That would be amazing, because I've hoped all year he would get nominated, but I doubted it, because the only nomination from a superhero movie ever was Heath Ledger. And not to be crass, but I do wonder if he would have been nominated if, you know, the tragedy hadn't happened.
Yes, but I think, you know, Black Panther is doing such a huge, huge campaign. You know, they just announced this thing where Film Comment is presenting it in sort of art house theaters around the country, followed by a Q&A from their editor with Ryan Coogler. So they're like, you know, Academy, this is not a popcorn movie. This is an art film now.
It's a very obvious ploy, but it's also smart. Like, it screams, we're pivoting now. This is a serious picture. It's not a superhero picture.
Well, I mean, but it's an indication this is a serious campaign. And I think of all the actors in the film, he has the best chance of getting nominated. Yeah.
100%, yeah. But I do think, I do personally, I would be surprised if he was nominated. I would be thrilled, but I would be surprised. Because I also think, I'm dreading the movie, but I think Vice, I think Sam Rockwell, I'm just expecting him to be nominated, even though not a lot of people have seen that yet.
Mm-hmm.
The few people who have called him delicious as George W. Bush, and he just won. It could be a victory lap.
Mm-hmm. But also he has like inside competition, right? Like he has, there's Steve Carell, there is Tyler Perry. So maybe if there's a vote split, I don't know. If you love Vice and you vote for several different people, maybe none of them get in. Maybe we'll see.
And then the other person that I have way too low on my charts, I am going to update the charts. I am sorry that they're so out of date. Because this October 14th is the last one for supporting actor, I must update, is Adam Driver, because he just keeps racking up the nominations for Black Klansman. So he is obviously a threat
for the final five. And I think that nomination, it's surprising that that's the one nomination that Black Klansman seems to be getting. But, you know, these two award bodies, the Gothams and the Spirit, are committee. So, you know, committees are always strange when it comes to nominations. But also, I think Adam Driver is somebody, award people have been high on for a few years now as sort of a great actor, and maybe finally he's in a movie that enough people love and have seen, and this is like his chance to get a nomination.
And I do think, you know, people are like, oh, it's, you know, I've heard people grousing, oh, it's horrible that the white actor is the one who is getting traction for this movie, but he does have the clearest arc in the movie, which always helps with Oscar. And he's not going to be the only representative, because if Black Klansman happens, Spike Lee is getting nominated.
Yes, and like we talked last week when we talked about screenplays, that's another nomination that I think it will get. And then we have Daniel Kaluuya in Widows, who is, to your point, when we talk about that movie, is one of the performances that pop.
Yeah.
And he has, like, you know, very strong, memorable scenes.
Yeah, so there, beyond the top three, I think there's a lot of wiggle room for campaigns. Which is why I'm doubting Timothée Chalamet, because even, I know you love the movie, but it is a divisive movie. People either seem to love it or hate it. And I think, and I think he would have to be older. I know that's a dumb comment. I think we'd have to be older to get his another nomination that quick.
Yeah, the one thing sort of going for him is the same thing that you mentioned about, what's his name?
Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell. Is you know, a lot of people obviously loved him last year in Call Me By Your Name, and
right.
A lot of people thought he was a great contender and somebody who should have won. Mm-hmm. So if that memory is still there,
that's true.
That could help him.
Yeah, victory laps sometimes happen. On the other hand, sometimes they're just done with you after, and you just never know. Something that doesn't seem to be happening, and I'm a little surprised that there seems to be no traction, is Russell Crowe for Boy Erased. I thought it might be a situation where it'd be welcome back, but people just don't seem that excited by the movie.
Yeah, I think that movie.
But I think he's very good in it.
Yeah, I agree. Him and Nicole are very good in it. But that movie is also another movie that's underperforming at the box office that nobody's talking about anymore, even though it just opened. So
I think let this be a lesson to filmmakers, because we see this every October. They've decided that October is the month to start releasing everything. But sometimes counter-programming is wise. Don't you think it was so smart of Black Klansman to open in the summer?
Yeah, it had basically had August to itself. Yeah, and The Wife did that too, and you know, so those two movies are
strong. Yeah,
they're still going strong. Yeah. So talking of The Wife, do you see Jonathan Pryce maybe getting in somewhere? Maybe SAG will like him. I don't know.
SAG, I think, does those weird coattail nominations more than other awards bodies do. So I suppose that's possible, but I don't think he pops enough in the movie. I like him, don't get me wrong, but, like, I just don't think it's that kind of a part or performance. Like, I personally thought Christian Slater was stronger.
Mm. Oh, yeah, because he has the scene where he spars with Glenn.
Yeah. And it's a very, like, crackling, great energy scene between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, I think she sort of, like, I don't know how to say this without being sounding mean, but she kind of blows Jonathan Pryce off the screen in their scenes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But in her scenes with Christian Slater, there's like an interesting, touchy energy between them.
Yes. The energy there is definitely more interesting. Somebody who's also campaigning and who can appear in, you know, the critics can rally around is Steven Yeun in Burning, which would be amazing if that happens. I don't see it happening as an Oscar nominee, but if he can win, like, a high-profile
critic award, yes. Yeah. He's so good in that movie. Oh, my God. And somebody else we have to say is so good and does not seem to be in the conversations, making me so angry, as Alessandro Nivola for Disobedience.
Yes. That's such a great performance.
It's such a complicated performance, and he's been good so many times, and I keep... being like, when is this going to happen for him, that people notice how good he is in everything?
Yes. He's so good in that movie, yeah. Brian Tyree Henry, I think you already mentioned him in Beale Street Could Talk. It's one scene, but it's the scene.
Yeah.
So,
and if he hadn't, I would say that would be an impossibility, except for the year he's been having. So he's an actor people are very excited about right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was on stage, he's in on TV, he's in two big fall movies.
Tony nominee, Emmy nominee.
Yeah,
it's the right time in his career if they think, oh, one scene is enough. But he's almost my favorite performance in If Beale Street Could Talk. Maybe my favorite. Regina King's the other one.
Yeah, I can see that. His scene is great. And it's great because of him.
Yeah. So, supporting actor, let's jump back to the Spirit nominations, because I think there's a lot of interesting things to discuss here.
Yeah.
We're going to go way over time today, because now we're just getting to the Spirit nominations.
The Suspiria thing is just ridiculous, like... Really? Like, what is this award for a cast?
Yeah, I want to hear a defense of this from someone who loves Suspiria. So if you love Suspiria and you are okay with this award, please speak up, because what?
Is this for casting Tilda in three parts? Like,
yeah,
what?
What's the award for? It's not... Yes, there are a lot of cast members, but it's not... They all just kind of sort of stand around. The only people who get to do anything are Tilda and Dakota.
Yes. They're all in the background. Literally, they're just background.
Yes, okay. They give each other sinister looks, and that's about it.
I mean, of the pool of nominees that the Spirits sort of obviously watched and liked, I thought maybe the tale would have been a more interesting winner in this, because they have to cast young and old and sort of find the right energy and all of that. And I think that was a movie they could have nominated, or the movie they loved the most, We the Animals. Casting those three young actors was amazing. And
such
that's a good job.
Yeah, casting.
Good. Mm-hmm.
I would say even Eighth Grade, if we want to talk about something where it's really only about two people. But that casting was difficult, obviously, too. And all of the side characters pop in a way, even though it's not like an acting movie outside of Elsie Fisher and Josh Hamilton. I just don't get it at all. There are so many options. There are so many options they could have gone with.
Yeah. But aside from that, I actually loved the Spirit nominations this year, mm-hmm. because they went so indie, right? And they, you know, they, like, even something like Can You Ever Forgive Me, which is, half an indie, because it is released by a major American corporation. So they were like, oh, that's not indie enough this year.
Yeah, it's quite an about face from their usual... Let's nominate everything that might be nominated at the Oscars. And I have to say, I know it was very acclaimed. I was very surprised with all the love for You Were Never Really Here. Because it opened a really long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all over these nominations.
It is. It was very well directed. You know, Lynn Ramsey is obviously a great director. I didn't really like that movie at all. But, you know, one of the nominations I really loved, obviously, I can't not mention it. It's Carey Mulligan in Wildlife.
Yes.
Actually, all of Best Actress is pretty fucking great.
Yeah.
And you know who's consistent? We've already mentioned her, but we have to mention her. Who's winning? Who's on every list so far? It's Glenn Close.
Yeah. Yep. I know I need to get off the Suspiria thing. I didn't even dislike Suspiria. I thought it was fine, but not great or terrible. But I just, it seems like, it almost seems like the nominating committee is trolling us, honestly. It seems like something designed to get people like us angry. Like, all of these things you could, and talking so that they get a lot of press.
Mm-hmm. My favorite category was international film, because the five films there, I don't think there will be a list of five better films this year, because we have Burning, Shoplifters, The Favorite, Roma, and Happy as Lazaro. Those are five such great, great movies.
And the only one I haven't seen from that list is Happy as Lazaro. And, but yeah, otherwise I'm 100% with you that, wow, that's quite a lineup.
And that one is going to be on Netflix next week, so everybody can see it. And,
oh, Happy as Lazaro?
Yeah.
Okay. The other category besides Suspiria that I think is very strange is editing. Because it has two movies that were not nominated for anything else: American Animals and Mid-90s.
Yes.
Your favorite movie.
Yes. My nemesis.
And the Tale and We the Animals make sense to me. Based on, I haven't seen The Tale, but based on what I've heard, and We the Animals has great editing.
So yeah.
I get it. But it just seems like an odd. Why not Suspiria there? Be a much more worthy nomination than giving them an ensemble award. The editing's very interesting in Suspiria.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there is a lot of cutting because, it's skating and a lot of movement in Midnight. So I guess, but okay.
I will say I was also pleased with how indie the first screenplay category was, maybe because I like the attention for Blame, because I saw it so long ago at Tribeca and a year ago and I thought it was really good, and then nobody talked about it.
What is Blame? I've never heard of it, so tell me.
It's about this high school girl who is sort of a pariah socially, because she had some kind of a breakdown that the movie's very vague about what happened. And she comes back to school, and in her drama class, they put on The Crucible, and she ends up having... Are you still there? You just disappeared for a second. Are you still there?
Okay. Sorry, yeah, I'm here.
So she gets involved with her teacher, who's played by Chris Messina. So it's sort of like this forbidden affair situation, plus all the high school dynamics between these girls who hate each other, and The Crucible overlay. Like, it is maybe too much. It was an ambitious screenplay for a first movie, but it's, I thought it was really good, and it won Best Actress at Tribeca that year, last year.
Oh,
for,
okay.
Melanie Lynskey was on the jury. For Nadia Alexander, who plays the secondary. She's not the lead. She plays her enemy.
Oh, okay. I mean, this is my favorite thing about The Spirits, is like these movies that you've never heard of that they highlight.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I just saw Life and Nothing More, which is the movie that won the Cassavetes Award last year.
Yeah.
And it just played at Film Forum, and that was an amazing movie. And so, you know, I love that when they do that. I'm also interested to see this film that appears in Best Actor, Socrates. It has, I think, another nomination besides Best Actor.
Yeah, John Cassavetes, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, and apparently it's a Brazilian movie about a 15-year-old man dealing with grief. And I'm like, okay, I want to see that.
I mean, the John Cassavetes Award is really interesting every year because even though we pay a lot of attention to movies, it's always hilarious to me when I've never heard of something. I'm like, how did I never hear of that? Like, especially if there's a famous actor in it. Like, I don't know how I never heard that a bread factory existed and Tyne Daly is in it.
Yeah, that actually, I've heard of it because it was at Cinema Village for maybe a week last month. Again, to your point about October, it also opened for a week in October. But yeah, before I could even get to it, it was gone.
Yeah. Yeah, so readers, that even happens in New York. I know that used to happen to me a lot more when I didn't live in New York. If I didn't go the first week of something at an art house, it was gone. So I hear your complaints about this all the time in comments. It does happen here in New York too, but not as much to the high profile art house movies, which sometimes play for months here.
Yeah. I mean, so I love, you know, obviously we both love We the Animals. So it was fantastic for it to like have all the headlines. We the Animals leads the Spirit Award nomination. That's so great.
Yeah. And I'm always proud when someone says they saw a movie because of me. And I know that I know you interviewed the director at the site and we talked about the movie a lot, and I know people have seen it because of the film experience, and that makes me happy.
Yeah, that's
two
great.
Of my friends went and saw it because of all the coverage we gave it, and they both said that was so good, thanks for bringing it to our attention.
Mm-hmm. So who's the front runner here? Because usually, like, you could say, oh, the Oscar movie or the Oscar contender will win, which I guess Glenn Close, but I don't know who's going to win in any other category. Is like, is First Reformed the sort of front runner here to win a few awards? Is it Beale Street? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard with the spirits because the voting body is so spread out, and I think because you can, you know, pay a membership fee and vote, you can belong to Filma Dependent. I think that's why Oscar contenders usually win, because more people have seen those movies, you know. And technically, within the Film Independent website, they say, you know, you're not supposed to vote on any category unless you've seen all the nominees. But you know, but you know how people are. I know they vote regardless because they're so excited to be a member.
Yes. They do send them screeners of every movie nominated.
So, but that said, First Reformed, obviously, I think it has a great shot at the wins, but I don't think it's sewn up at all because, you know, the people who love Eighth Grade are obsessed with it. And if Beale Street Could Talk, same thing. That's even true of Leave No Trace. Like, you meet super fans of that movie. The only one I don't think
has... Oh, Nathaniel, I just saw it.
What?
I just saw Leave No Trace. I loved it so much.
Yeah, it's good.
I was just so good.
Although I don't understand how, given the love for it, it's a little bit weird to me that Ben Foster wasn't nominated.
Yeah, that's surprising, yeah. But, you know, again, it's like, it's the committee thing, right?
Yeah.
They just... And I guess, I mean, maybe what they did this year, like, you know, with Ben Foster, Spike Lee, Melissa McCarthy, they're like, oh, these people are already established. We would rather, you know, give nominations to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Which is fair. I mean, the spirits should have been doing that for the past 10 years when they were going all Oscar crazy. Because it's supposed to be a celebration of independent voices. And if someone's super established, unless they're making something truly indie, why are they winning all the awards?
Exactly.
That made me so mad that year that, remember Silver Linings Playbook was up for things?
Oh, and The Artist? Which wasn't even American, which as somebody who was not born in this country, I always sort of, you know, get a little mad when people are always like, but it's only for American movies. But sometimes if you have a sort of like rule, you should stick to it.
Yeah. I'm a big stickler for sticking to rules, as you all know, Because I think awards are meaningless unless you have parameters. Which is why the award shows were like, there's 3 nominees in this category, there's 4 nominees in this category, there's 6 nominees in this category, and there's just no rhyme or reason ever. Those awards make me so crazy, and I always wonder how anybody takes them seriously. And yet they get coverage. I'm not going to name names, but you all know the award shows that do this.
Yes. I think we know exactly who we are talking about. Another sort of great category is supporting male, like you have Raul Castillo, Richard E. Grant, Josh Hamilton. I haven't seen John David Washington, but like, okay, I like him in Black Klansman, so if he got in for Monsters and Men, great.
I have only talked to one person who's seen this movie, and that was Nick, who, you know, couldn't be here this morning. I did try to get him to talk to us, but he loved it. Monsters of Men. And he was raving about the acting, so that nomination made me happy.
Yeah, this is another movie that before we could get to the theater, it was snatched.
Yeah. Any last comments? Who do you think is going to win first feature? Do you think it's going to be We the Animals?
Or which award?
First feature?
Yeah, I think We the Animals, since it's... yeah, We the Animals maybe win because it got the most nominations.
Or do you think it's not mainstream enough and it could be Hereditary or Sorry to Bother You?
I mean, those movies have probably been seen by more people.
Yeah.
I hope it's anything but Hereditary. That movie I do not care for. So I would love to see any of the other 4 actually win.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? It could be Hereditary just because it's the biggest one of them. It's more people saw that one.
Yeah. I would be so thrilled if We the Animals had a major prize like that. Because I feel like nobody's seen it, and it's so good, and we've been saying it's so good for so long.
Yeah. I hope it wins a couple of things.
And I was so thrilled that Raul Castillo is in supporting.
Yeah.
He's so good in that movie.
Such a great performance. Yeah, Spirit Awards, you did great this year.
Except for Suspiria. We know you're trolling us because you need people to talk about you in order to get members.
Yeah, that's so great.
All right, we're way over an hour, so thanks for listening.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your patience. You can follow Murtada on Twitter.
Yes, I am under ME_says.
Me says, that's easy to remember.
Yes.
It's also your initials.
Yeah.
You're not being narcissistic with the me.
Maybe.
And you can follow me at Nathaniel R. Also very easy to remember.
Yeah, so follow us, you know, on Twitter. You know, leave us comments. We'd love to hear from you.
And you know what? We should probably take reader questions one of these weeks. Maybe next weekend. Actually, let's do it next weekend to celebrate the holidays.
Yeah, so questions about, you know, the Oscars, about the movies you've seen, about anything you want us to talk about.
We'll have a Q&A next podcast if you send us questions. Thanks for listening. Go see Widows.